Hello, everybody. Ian here. Before we start the show, I just want to have a brief little message here. We've been coming along a lot these past 2 months, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening. We've been getting a lot of kind notices, and we all really appreciate that. But we want to keep pushing this podcast forward, making it better and better. If you're a fellow podcasters out listening, we want to cross-promote. We'd love to promote your podcast on ours and vice versa. And also, if there's anybody out there who'd like to be, we have two commercial break spaces, and we want to know if there's anybody out there who wants to sponsor our podcast. We'd greatly appreciate it. We don't know if we're ready for the big leagues yet. Maybe not like stamps.com or carrierpigeon.com. That I might have just made one of those up. But, you know, anything at all. On behalf of Nick, Cassie, and I, once again, we're all thankful for everybody who's listening, and let's get back to the show.
Coming at you from coast to coast, it's the Real Deal Podcast with your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Grimaldi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies. I talk about movies. I review movies, I live and breathe movies, just basically everything movies. I'm here as always with my co-host, Cassie Grimaldi. Hi, Cassie.
Hi, Ian. Hi, everybody. I do all of those same things, and I watch TV, and I write about TV. So, yeah.
Great. And this week, we are going to be reviewing the adaptation of John Green's The Fault in Our Stars, which did some really big business this weekend, and we're both excited to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's just get started here. This week, the news might be kind of blended a little bit with our TV segment, because we're going to talk about the Tony Awards, which, of course, is the live TV awards for Broadway.
For the American Theater Wing.
Exactly, the American Theater Wing. I don't normally follow or watch the Tonys that often. Cassie encouraged me to watch it this year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you normally watch it every year, Cassie, even if you haven't seen the plays?
Yeah, I usually watch it just because I like theater and musicals, and it's a dying form of high art, and I like it.
Do you still feel like you're rooting for anybody, even in years where you haven't seen any of the plays that are nominated necessarily?
It depends. I mean, if there's like a revival that I'm a fan of, even if I haven't seen this particular revival or something, like I'm producer Nick's gonna get mad, but like I really don't like Les Mis, so I was rooting against it this year.
I don't know if that will make it on the final one, but our producer just dropped a nice big F-bomb. Don't worry, we're listed as explicit on the podcast app, so that's a good thing.
Nobody's worried.
All right, I'm not worried either. Just for our viewers out there, listeners out there. But anyway, you know, I've never seen the play of Les Mis. All I know of it is from the movie, mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, during the Tony show this year, they had everybody from the cast doing a rendition of One Day More, which they also did during the Oscars. And I think this one went a little more smoothly because they didn't have Russell Crowe scream singing.
Ugh. I don't know. I'm just still so tired of Les Mis, and I've been tired of Les Mis since the actual French Revolution, and
but overall, what did you, Les Mis aside, I don't think Les Mis really went home with anything this year, but
no.
Les Mis aside, what did you think of the Tonys this year? Were you entertained?
Yeah, I was totally entertained. I think the Tonys are like a good, they're like a great access point to theater. Even if you're like new to theater, I think watching the Tonys could definitely get somebody to be a fan of and like really want to be interested and know more. And I think that was really effective with Hugh Jackman, who just from the beginning when he hopped up like a human kangaroo hybrid, which I think happens if you're from Australia, right?
Yeah, that's pretty true.
Yeah, so he hopped in and was just, like, unquestionably charismatic and sexually ambiguous, and it was great.
You were saying you think that Hugh Jackman's kind of like this old-fashioned Hollywood, like Hollywood star that we don't really have anymore. Can you expand on that and what you meant?
I don't know. I just see, I don't know. We're in a world where there's no real movie stars
anymore.
In a
world.
Hugh Jackman
in a world.
It sort of does everything, and he has, mm-hmm. like, this happiness and charisma and, like, weird campiness to him that really reminds me of, like, someone like Gene Kelly or, I don't know.
And this is the kind of guy
who could... He's an old soul.
This is... Yes, exactly. But this is the kind of guy who can entertain a room, whether he's at Comic-Con or the Tonys, and that's two incredibly different audiences, so the fact they can play to both of those, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, and he can wear really tight gold pants in The Boy from Oz.
Yeah, he can get away with it.
That's a play he was in in 2003. Or a musical, I mean, yeah. He wears, like, really tight, shiny gold pants and sings a song.
Shows what I know about theater, but I'm trying to learn. I really liked what you said before, that the Tonys are a really good introduction to theater for the rest of America, because not everybody gets to go to Broadway shows all the time. They're only in one city, sometimes more expensive, and this is a lot more accessible. And, like, they can, unlike with the Oscars or the Emmys, they can recreate entire scenes. Like, they had Neil Patrick Harris doing a really great musical number from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen, but now I really want to.
It's one of my favorite movie musicals. It's really great. And
I've never seen the
that
movie.
Performance was everything and more, because there's this part in that song, Sugar Daddy, where he, like, goes out into the audience, and he did the car wash thing to Orlando mm-hmm. Bloom, and just
that was hilarious.
It was amazing. And then he kissed his husband, David Burtka, on live TV, which was just, like, everything anyone could ever dream of.
Yes, it was Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris is also another person who can do a lot of different things. He's a TV star. Now he's a Broadway star. There was a lot of TV and movie stars winning awards this year. I feel like that's the case a lot with the Tonys, but Bryan Cranston also won for All the Way.
Yeah, the whole best actor in a lead role, whatever, I don't know if that's the
It was
real
like
name.
Best actor. It's split up into three different, like, categories. There's revival, there's best revival,
well,
best
anyway,
musical,
it's
best drama.
Actor in a leading role in a play. Everyone was a TV actor, so there's.
Is that so?
Yeah, so I think the people who perform in plays who aren't TV actors are, like, some of the most talented people, and then when they, like, burn themselves out, they start doing TV, and, like, really just all they want to do is have, like, a supporting role on, like, a fledgling NBC sitcom or something, but, like, I think TV actor and movie actors sort of take away the focus on it, but then again, they sort of have revitalized people being interested in going to theater and stuff.
Yeah.
Especially with All the Way, because who would have
gone to see a play about Lyndon Johnson? I think
a
lot of people
financed it without Bryan Cranston.
A lot of people are just going for Bryan Cranston, and then they're coming out of it and saying, oh, I learned a lot about Lyndon Johnson now. which you never thought you would have learned. But, that's a really good thing. I lost my train of thought there. Cranston's great. Oh, man, I completely forgot what I was going
to
say
coming to TV because Bryan Cranston.
Oh, yes, I heard about
it.
That.
Yeah, we just heard about it.
You know, I know what I was about to say, but I'm kind of surprised. I was thinking that they were going to probably turn this into a movie and maybe help Bryan Cranston get an EGOT, because he's halfway there already. The EGOT, for anyone who doesn't know, that means when somebody's won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, and he's won the Emmy and the Tony so far.
Yeah. Somebody else did that. Somebody else started doing that on the Tonys. I forget who. And Audra McDonald won her sixth Tony, and she won a category for, she won a Tony for every acting category that she could, which is pretty cool. Oh my god.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Way to go. I'm just kind of learning about her this year, but way to go, Audra McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Some other moments. And I thought this show, like, unlike the Oscars, it was, like, a very easy show to watch. Like, just everything was very efficient, and, like, they didn't throw in a lot of, like, half-assed, like, random musical numbers or tributes that weren't there for a reason. Everything that wasn't an award being presented had something to do with the plays and made absolute sense being there. Except for one thing, mm-hmm. which was when out of nowhere Hugh Jackman decided to start talking about how this one song from The Music Man is basically like a rap song. So then out of nowhere, LL Cool J and T.I. started rapping a version of The Music Man, which felt like an acid trip. And I've never done acid before, but if this is any indication of what acid is like, that means that the experience of acid is basically LL Cool J and some really terrible ideas from the writer's room.
Oh my god. I don't know what happened there.
I remember comedian Julie Klausner was tweeting about it, and she was basically saying, like, I think I just died from watching that. I don't think I watched a real thing. I think it killed all of us.
And then a few minutes later, when Neil Patrick Harris won for Hedwig, you gotta say it like you're German, but she tweeted that she wished she had survived the Music Man rap to see the acceptance speech.
I feel the same way. I don't know. I can't believe that clip hasn't gotten more plays on the internet the next day, because it was so weird and out of nowhere.
I just want the world to forget about it. I don't think it deserves any more attention.
So you think that's why nobody's been playing, because everybody's just kind of, I think everybody's Men in Black style trying to erase it from their memories.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, maybe in the next, maybe the Oscars will do something really embarrassing next year that will make us completely forget about it. Maybe Seth MacFarlane will do another musical number.
Mm-hmm.
And Cassie totally can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, any more thoughts on the Tony Awards? Are there any plays that you particularly want to see now because of from the Tonys?
Yeah, I've been really wanting to see Hedwig, and I really, really want to go see A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which won for Best Musical. And
yeah, that one sounds really good.
Yeah.
I would see that, too. Okay, let's move on to our official, to our TV section, Analog This. This week was season 3 finale of a show that's a favorite of Cassie and mine, Veep.
Mm-hmm.
Just ended its third season on HBO. This week it ended with 2 episodes instead of 1, so we got a full hour of Julie Louis-Dreyfus and the crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was great for us. I thought that, I don't know what you think yet, but I think that this was a really stellar season so far of all 3 seasons. Stellar. So far, all 3 seasons of the show have been great, but I think this one was special, and I think it was aiming for a little more than the show usually does, and start taking the story in a whole new direction. I really like when shows do that. Mm-hmm. From this point on, spoiler alerts for season 3 of Veep, by the way, and the season finale. Cassie, what did you think of the season finale as well as this season in general?
I thought the season finale was really, really good. I loved that it was an hour long. And I love that terrible things always happen to them because they're the worst people in America, but it's hilarious.
Yes, I like to think that this show is basically Parks and Rec if everybody on Parks and Rec hated each other.
Yeah.
That seems like a really accurate description to me. But yes, they are all such terrible people. And this season, just so everyone knows, so basically she's Selena Meyer, who's played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, is vice president of the United States. And this season she's running for president, and the last 2 episodes happened on the eve of the New Hampshire primary, and Selena finds out that the president is actually resigning, and she is now going to take over as president of the United States. Which, and basically it wasn't like, there's one in season 1, there's this one episode where like the president is having a heart attack and like she temporarily has to take over as president, and then after like 2 minutes they're like, oh okay, you're done now. But this was not a fake out. Like, she is the president now. The show, the season ended with her being president, which is weird because this show is still called Veep. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the new direction they're taking it in?
I don't know. I think that she'll be foiled eventually, and I just thought it was hilarious how she was sworn in, but she like mispronounced something or like someone interrupted her slightly, and the Chief Justice refused to count it as a real swearing in, and so they had to redo it. And one of my favorite jokes was when she was like, I need Catherine to hold the thing. Oh, the Bible. I don't know. I thought that was great. But yeah.
I do too. I like every time Catherine comes in because
Catherine's so always underrated. I love
Catherine always just calls her mom out on her bullshit. Like, Catherine, she just says, like, Celine just says, like, oh, Catherine, I'm so happy you're, like, oh, I couldn't have done this without you. And Catherine's like, what are you talking about, Mom? Yes, you could have.
She's like, with your presence and your,
She just always, like, asks questions that clearly her mother couldn't answer, which shows that even when your mother is president of the United States, you can still get embarrassed by your parents. I thought another great moment from this episode was the squeaky shoes.
Oh, yeah.
When she's walking to give her first big speech as president and the shoes are squeaking.
Oh, and everybody on Twitter's, like, making fun of the squeaking. Yeah.
It was also, there was a lot of bringing in, like, there was, like, a lot of this last episode was, like, them showing all these, like, articles and, like, press reactions. A lot of this season was about, like, politicians versus the press, I felt
versus
like.
Versus the internet exploding.
Yes, especially with Jonah, and the fact that another big twist Brent that happened this season is that Jonah became a blogger.
Yeah.
Wait, what? And his blog, say the name, Cassie, I know you like
Vyontology. It. Vyontology.
What a great little wordplay right there.
His name's Jonah Ryan.
And it's called Ryontology, get it?
Jonas, one of my favorite characters, if not my favorite, because he's repulsive and
yes,
it's wonderful.
he's repulsive, but you every time he walks in the room, he's like that classic sitcom character where you're like, yes, they're gonna say something funny. Like, they're just, you know, like predictably they're gonna be great.
Yeah,
I love all the new things they did. I love how in the second to last episode when he's trying to get his mom to help him get a connection in Washington because he's basically destroyed his entire career, and then his mom gets in the fight with the person on his phone and he just goes, oh, Mom, you're so annoying.
Ugh.
Like a little kid, basically. Yeah. I think he's probably one of the best characters on TV in general.
Yeah, he's great. He's very well written.
Yes, he is very well written. Everyone on the show is Armando Iannucci is a genius.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming the next season won't come until next year. And like I said, I love the shakeup because I don't really know where the show will be going at this point or how much longer she will be president for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Any more thoughts on Veep?
No.
Okay. Just one thing quickly, so Orange is the New Black started this week, and it's a big deal because season one was a big hit, so we've started watching season two. How far have you gotten, Cassie?
I'm on, like, episode 5 or something like that.
Yeah, it's about the same for me, too, and it's weird because the show was released all at the same time, and it's a new model, and everyone kind of watches at their own pace.
I know people who are done already.
I know, that's... When did they... Did they, like, literally just watch it in 2 days?
Yeah. Because... Yeah.
How do you feel about binge-watching, Cassie? Would you prefer to watch it all in... Would you prefer to watch it all, like, in 2 days? Or pace it out a little bit? Because I think it does kind of change the viewing experience.
I like to watch everything all at once, alone, in my cave, because I don't...
The bat cave.
Yeah.
But anyway,
in my hermit crab shell.
The shell and the cave.
Yeah, but I just don't have time.
Yeah, it's hard to do it all at once. You need to, like, I think I heard people saying that their only weekend plan for this past weekend was to watch Orange the New Black.
Mm.
It's a really good excuse to be antisocial if you want to be.
Yeah, I'm very antisocial. That's so fine with me.
But for the first few episodes, so far, so good, do you think?
I think it's great. I think there's too much Larry, because who cares about Larry? And, like, literally no one cares about Larry. Like, we get a Larry, like, to be on NPR. But
with fake Ira Glass. I mainly enjoyed the Larry, the Jason Biggs presence. So you get those moments with Larry and with his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Who are pretty hilarious Jewish parents.
Well, I think you're alone on that. But,
all alone. But all the other characters, as always, are interesting and great in their own ways.
Yeah, they're sort of like double-fisting backstories into episodes, and I like it because who wants to be in the prison all the time?
No, I remember hearing an interview with Jenji Cohen where she was saying that the reason she had the flashbacks was because that, like, it was that the show is more interesting than beyond the prison, that, like, they needed to go outside of it and see how these people's lives were so colorful and interesting outside of prison, that they led completely different lives, they're completely different people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're showing flashbacks of people at different ages and all this stuff. So yeah, I think the show's gotten a lot more ambitious, and they're doing a lot. I think they have a lot more freedom because last season was such a huge hit out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you have those high expectations, but I think they're living up to it so far.
Yeah, I think people love this show, and I think it's hard to find things wrong with it other than Larry. And
she really don't like Larry.
Larry. Ugh.
So, unfortunately, we can't have a complete in-depth review of it because we haven't finished watching it, and it feels wrong when the show is all out there to not do a complete review when it's not all out there. So I think what we're going to do in the near future is devote a big segment or maybe a separate episode and review the entire season when we finish it. And luckily, because it's all out there, the timing doesn't completely matter. It's kind of cool like that. So
mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll do that. Props to you, Netflix, for changing the way we watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Some really unfortunate news this week. So over the weekend, I'm sure you all have heard, comedian and actor, just awesome, funny person in general, Tracy Morgan was involved in a car crash. He was coming back from his tour. His fellow touring comedian Jimmy Mack did not survive. Tracy is still alive and currently in the hospital. There's been a lot of rumors floating around, but we just know he's been operated on and he's in critical condition, but still alive. It's really sad news. I'm a very big fan of Tracy's. I've loved him since 30 Rock and even before that, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I think regardless how you feel about Tracy Morgan and some of his weirder antics, it's always unfortunate when something like this happens. So he's I'm a fan, and I'm glad that FX is going to hold off on his pilot and everything that he's been working on,
because I'm really looking forward to seeing that pilot when we do get to see it. He's collaborating with the It's Always Sunny guys, and that's just a lot of hilarity in one room that I think will have a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hope he gets better, I guess.
Yeah, Tracy, we hope you get better. I mean, not just for the sake of the show, but also because you're an awesome human, and we hope you get better, and we want to see you do more funny stuff and maybe a sequel to Who Dat Ninja one day, just in my dreams. That was a 30 Rock reference, but yeah. Okay, That's gonna wrap the TV segment up for this week. We are going to take a very quick commercial break, but don't change that dial, because when we come back, we're going to have a review of The Fault in Our Stars, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. It is time for Real Talk. This is when we review a movie that's in theaters right now. This week, we will be reviewing The Fault in Our Stars. Cassie and I were both very excited for this. The Fault in Our Stars is based on the novel by John Green of the same name. Cassie, you were a fan of this novel, am I right?
What did you just say? Sorry, I missed it.
You were a fan of this novel, am I right?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm not. I wouldn't slate myself with some of the, like, the more intense diehard people out there, but I mean,
it has a huge.
It's an enjoyable read.
But you read it. You read it. When did you read it?
I was in college, probably 2 years ago.
Okay, so you read it. Yeah, you read it a while ago. I just read it for the first time this past week and whizzed through like the whizzed through the whole thing in like 3 or 4 days. I'm a pretty terrible reader, but this was a really fast read.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to get through quickly, but for anybody not familiar with The Fault in Our Stars who hasn't read the book, quick synopsis. So this is the story of a girl named Hazel, who in the movie is played by Shailene Woodley, who is a teenage cancer survivor who basically just kind of like is a recluse because she's kind of afraid of being more emotionally attached to people because she could kind of die any day is how she feels. But her parents make her go to a cancer support group so she can meet more people her age. And there she meets a kid named Augustus Waters, who is played by Ansel Elgort. And they quickly fall in love with each other. There's a lot more to it, but that's a pretty simple way to put it. Cassie, what were your thoughts on the movie compared to the book and as a movie standalone?
I mean, I didn't expect any. I try not to go into movie adaptations with any huge investments. I mean, I like John Green, but I sort of take him with a grain of salt because I think a lot of people get, like, really enraptured in his writing, which I appreciate for being smart writing,
yes.
But I don't appreciate for being glorified romances.
In what way?
I think that the romance, especially in this book, is... I mean, it's obviously unrealistic, but I think that it's John Green is supposed to be encouraging young people to think for themselves and be, like, open to interpreting metaphors, and yet he still consistently writes about heterosexual teenagers who put all their ambitions aside to be in love with each other and, like, just devote their lives to each other, and, yeah.
But, yes, that what you're saying with the metaphor is there is a character in this who literally thinks that everything, well, the character Augustus, literally he thinks everything he does is a metaphor for something else.
Yeah, and the thing that I most dislike about, The Fault in Our Stars is that, the book is about interpreting metaphors, and then John Green ends it by telling you how to interpret his book with Augustus's letter. That happens at the end of the book.
Yes. Well, wait. Actually, right now I'm just going to throw this in here. Spoiler alert for The Fault in Our Stars, the movie and the book. It's the same ending, basically. But spoiler alerts for The Fault in Our Stars. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make a note on the ending. It's actually interesting that you say that because in the book and the movie, Hazel's obsessed with this novel called An Imperial Affliction, which is a book about cancer within a book about cancer, which is a really smart meta thing that you wouldn't normally see in a young adult novel. But anyway, like, Hazel's whole obsession with that book is that it ends in the middle of the sentence because people, like, because it, like, the character supposedly dies at the end, and people normally might die, like, in the middle of a sentence. And I thought the whole entire time that's how The Fault in Our Stars was going to end, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed like very out of nowhere, but that would be, I don't know how they would have, if they even did that, how they could have captured it on screen. Also, another side note, would you at all call Augustus's character something of a manic pixie dream guy?
Yeah, I think when I was reading and when I saw the movie, every other word he said kind of made me groan because,
I think that's like the point, though, that he's supposed to be a little, it's like aware that he's like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't even think I'd want somebody to talk to me that way. It's almost condescending.
And he is like 17 years old.
It borders on condescending, but I don't know.
The cigarette in the mouth is a little ridiculous, but
he's how cool. I think Edward Cullen's the ultimate manic pixie dream boy, but
wait, that's Edward Cullen from
Twilight.
Oh.
Not to say that I think he fits the archetype of that. I don't I don't appreciate any manic pixies of any gender. No. But
they're not normally a good thing. We're not necessarily approving of it. But I think Gus is a little better. I thought the actor Ansel Elgort did a really good job. I don't know what it was about his acting, but I thought he did a really good job, especially in a lot of parts.
Yeah. I don't know. The character annoys me, and I feel bad saying that because he has cancer, but he's so annoying.
I honestly, you know, I agree. I like his character overall, but it took me, when I started reading the book, my first thought, like, when he first gets introduced is, oh my god, he's a manic pixie dream guy.
You were like, ugh, this ought to be good.
Yeah. But yes, anyway, I thought he was a little bit ridiculous at first, and like kind of like he's a little too whimsical to ever exist, but that's sort of like the point, is that him and Hazel are two different people.
He doesn't exist.
Well, you know what, in this world. Yeah. But him and Hazel are two different people who both are afflicted with the same disease, and they both choose two different ways to try and live with it, as in Hazel tries to close her world off as much as possible, and Augustus thinks he needs to die for some kind of cause and be this big hero, and everybody should know his name. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense in that regard. But in translation from book to screen, mostly it's the same. Like, it starts and ends the same way, but in terms of how it's changed, they trimmed a lot off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, little thing. Was there anything missing from the book that annoyed you in any way, or like you wish was there?
Not really. I think that the adapters, Scott Neustrider and Michael Weber, did a really good job in terms
of they did
adapting and including things. And I think that the reason we read novels sometimes is different than the reason we see movies. And I think that sort of editorialization that John Green does in internal monologues and like sort of lengthy discussions that sort of coincide with the theme, but don't necessarily push a story along visually that they might in a movie, are the reason we read books. So yeah,
no, that's absolutely right.
And I think good screenwriters know that.
Yeah, sorry.
There has to be a reason that you'll still go back to the book and read the book, and I think that honestly is sort of what makes good adaptions. And maybe some people would say the book is better, but I just would say the book is
different,
written differently. Yeah.
I mean, you lose, like, something that gets kind of lost from page to screen is like a lot of like Hazel's like intelligent commentary and like thoughts on life that are very dark and very interesting, but I don't blame the movie for that. A lot of the stuff would have been really challenging to put on screen, and honestly, they do a really good job of showing rather than telling. The book is a book, so it's going to be telling over showing. And I think they actually, like, I don't want to say which one is better, but I think something I liked about the movie is I felt like they actually trimmed a little bit of the fat and made it more concise by combining certain scenes and putting some stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot to be said about that, making it a little concise but still mostly getting the same point across.
How do you feel about, sort of like going back to something we touched upon a little bit, how do you feel about the fact that it's got this young adult sticker slapped across the front of it?
Yeah, that's, I understand why they did that, but I feel like it's kind of limiting in that regard and sort of unfortunate because it gives this story kind of like it adds something to the story that doesn't necessarily deserve to be. Because just when I think of young adult, I think of teenage fantasies and things like Twilight and Divergent and stuff that's not necessarily meant to be realistic, but also things that aren't really accurate to how teenagers think in teenage life. And I think that this movie was striving for something much more. And I think usually with like the Twilight series, they're only aiming for one audience. And I think this movie could reach across an entire spectrum. And I think honestly it would be even better for people who were once this age and now are no longer that. I think they might look at it a different way. Like the way we looked at Augustus, some teens might worship him. I honestly wish I was that cool when I was in high school, but without cancer, but I mean, like, but then we look at him with more like a lens of maturity and saying he's kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but what do you think about the young adult label?
Well, Ruth Graham, who writes for Slate, just published this essay a few days ago called Against YA, and it says, read whatever you want, but you should feel embarrassed when what you're reading was written for children. And I think she's wrong, because I think that's a really limited way to look at the world, and I think that young people are condescended to too mm-hmm. much, and this movie, even though it's written by three adult men, doesn't condescend.
No, not at all.
To, especially teen girls, who I think really strongly align themselves with this movie. But
there was the biggest, they were the biggest part of the audience when I saw it.
Yeah, and, yeah. Yeah, I think that the fact, Jendahl, who is a book critic, wrote that at its heart that the young adult genre aims to be pleasurable, and mm-hmm. I think that that's true, and I don't think people, I know this is gonna sound stupid, but I don't think people should be ashamed of that, as simplistic as a rebuttal that is. I think simple ideas and simple storytelling exist everywhere in mm-hmm. literature, and I don't know, at least thematically.
It is kind of simple. I mean, it's a simple idea for this, but it's told in a complex way, and it's a really dark idea.
Yeah, I think that even the idea that people really like the little infinities is really sophisticated.
Oh yeah, it's very sophisticated.
I think that's really smart, and I think
the book is even more of that. A lot of that wasn't necessarily in the movie, but there's a lot of really smart, deep philosophical and mathematical ideas and things like that are touched upon.
They reference at least like 100 classical philosophers and like important books, but I don't know. I was looking at this quiz on BuzzFeed.
Speaking of classical philosophers.
Yeah, it says Twilight is more difficult than Hemingway, according to the Teacher's Guide Lexile, which is a system that like ranks what books are on different grade reading levels, and it's like this quiz. We maybe can link it in the description because I think it's great. But it's
yeah, send it to me.
I will. But it's just, it's so funny.
I don't. Wait, can you wait? I don't. So they're saying that Twilight.
Twilight, is that a higher reading level than The Sun Also Rises?
Oh my god.
The Hunger Games, is at a higher reading level than Cat's Cradle?
And I wonder what are they're ranking it on, this, like how hard it, like what words they're using and how hard it is to get through, or
yeah.
Because that's very interesting. I was never huge on Hemingway.
Some of them are really funny. I'll send it to you. Send. Producer Nick can put it in the description.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it. But yeah, it's one of those. The book is of The Fault in Our Stars, the movie, I guess, to some degree, it's one of those things where it makes you learn a lot of new things, and you look up a lot more on Wikipedia because of that.
Yeah.
Like having a reference guide.
And it's great because it encourages young people, especially, I think young people are really important, and it encourages them.
The children are our future. Yes, yeah. I think this is an inspiring thing. I think that the problem with the young adult labels, I think the idea of the young adult genre is kind of associated with guilty pleasure, and mm-hmm. I think The Fault in Our Stars aspires for so much more, and I think if there are more young, I think it's a good thing that it's labeled as young adult, because maybe it will inspire young adult writers to reach for something a little higher,
mm-hmm.
and like have something as good as this, or at least not even as good, or something as intelligent as this, and then kids will read it and they'll like it and they'll be inspired by cool things as opposed to mediocre stories about vampires.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But some other notes on the movie. One really quick thing, last week when I talked about Chef on the show, I was talking about how they use social media and the use of Twitter was kind of annoying, but for this they do a little bit of that, and they have like they show Hazel and Augustus texting each other, and these little cartoon text bubbles will pop up on screen, and it's like very obvious, and it's kind of like an essential part of the movie, but did that bother you at all, or did you like that? Because I actually kind of liked it. I don't know about if like is the right word, but it wasn't. It felt right. It felt organic.
Yeah, it felt. I think the more it happens, the more organic it's gonna start to feel.
Yes.
But I mean, I didn't mind it. I thought it was better than lots of other ways that I've seen.
Like in Neighbors.
Yeah, like the movie Neighbors. Just overwhelmed by things like that. But
it definitely wasn't overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very like whimsical about it, and it worked with the tone of their romance.
People were probably complaining about this when like phones started coming out and they did like split screens. They were like, ugh, this is unbelievable. So, can you hear something?
I don't know. I remember, like, early on, sometimes they would just zoom in on the phone, and, like, when people have Blackberries, and it's like, this just feels like product placement now.
Yeah, I don't know.
But this is...
I meant, like landlines.
Landline. Oh, yeah, I wonder if it was like that. I remember in, like, if you've seen, like, Wall Street, the one with Michael Douglas.
His
ridiculous cell phone.
Same with American Psycho.
Oh, yeah. But that's different with American Psycho, is because that came out in the year 2000, and it's about the 80s, and Wall Street, that was, like, a current thing at the time, true. So I'm sure. Right. Yeah, so that's, like, that's actually an interesting thing about...
American Psycho feels really old.
It does. That's a tribute, I guess, maybe because it's actually 14 years old, or maybe that's a tribute to how well-made it is, that it actually feels like it came out in that era.
Yeah.
One or the other. But, anyway, that's an interesting point though about when you show like new technology in movies, is that it always looks weirder when it's happening in the current day, but if you do something from a long time ago, it doesn't, the time ages it and makes it not seem as weird.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so this other thoughts on The Fault in Our Stars, this movie ends in a very sad way. It ends the same way as the movie. It ends the same way as the book does, and this has been
everyone
like
everyone dies.
if you want to say it like that, something like that. But my entire theater was just a collective. it was just collective sobbing, which is something I don't remember the last time I've been to a movie and the entire theater was in tears.
Oh my god, I couldn't stop laughing. I felt really bad.
Yes, we went together, and there was a girl behind us who was crying so much that she was, I think, heaving of some sort.
Yeah.
And like, normally it was really interesting to observe that audience and see that reaction, because really the only like loud reactions you're allowed to have to something in a movie is either laughter or crying. And I feel like people don't normally cry that much during movies. It's really
hard. At least not loudly.
Not loudly, yeah, but there are people crying loudly. I think that a lot of the audience were people that had read the book, and
I think there was a certain sense of solidarity in the audience where people felt like they could cry.
Yes, that's absolutely right. That was a big part of like the press and like the early
articles.
I
felt that when I eventually cried.
I teared up too. Everyone did. I just think that, and there was a big part of like the press and the articles before was saying like, get ready, we're warning everyone, get ready to cry. But also I think this was an audience filled with people who knew what was going to happen and they still cried. And I think the familiarity, or the fact that, like, the inevitability made it even sadder.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's interesting to look back at old stories once again, because sometimes when you know the ending, that will make you look at the story in a new light, or make it even better, or look at it in a different emotional way.
Yeah, everybody just dies alone, you know? And sometimes it hits you harder than other times.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you're gonna cry really hard over dying, sometimes you'll just cry a little bit.
Yeah.
Some final thoughts. Would you recommend this movie to people, both people who have read the book and people who haven't read the book?
Yeah. I would recommend it. Definitely.
I would, yes. I would definitely. I would definitely recommend this as well. This is one of the better movies that's come out this summer. Besides being an alternative to Blockbuster, it's just a very good movie and an entertaining one, and a sad one, and one about life that I enjoy a lot. I think it's a good movie for teenagers and people of other ages to see as well. It also did, as I mentioned earlier, amazing business at the box office this weekend and like beat out a lot of big blockbusters, which I guess it's a victory for the little guy in a way.
Mm-hmm.
This was made, had a production budget of $12 million, and it already broke even on its first weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll be getting more movies of that ilk in the future.
Yeah, one can only hope that... I mean, I really love teen movies. If you're a fan of the show, you'll know that from last week's episode.
10 Things I Hate About You.
But, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yes. I appreciate any writers, directors, or whoever who take a struggling genre or something that's been kind of manipulated in a bad way by Hollywood and try to put some class back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, go see The Fault in Our Stars, new, if you're a fan of the book or not, doesn't matter. It's definitely worth your time. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but don't turn that dial, because we'll be right back with more Real Deal Podcast.
Yeah, don't turn the dial on your iPhone or
your dial machine. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everyone. Before we go, as always, we're going to end with a question of the week. So, with the Tonys we were talking about earlier, we figured we'd make this musical-themed and Broadway-themed, because also it kind of connects, because there's been a lot of movie adaptations on Broadway, just movies turned into plays, whether or not those original movies were musicals or not. This year, The Aladdin musical was nominated, so we're going to ask the question, what movie do you think would make a good Broadway musical? Cassie, what would your choice be?
I've said this before, and I'll say it again, The First Wives Club, because it would just be great, and it'd be great if Bette Midler was in it.
Yes, it would. I've never seen this movie, and I know nothing about it. So I don't know what is there. Is there something about the story of the movie or the tone or whatever that would lend itself good to a musical? Yeah,
tonally, it really works. There's sort of a musical number in it, but not really. Yeah.
Okay. That's all right.
I won't spoil too much for you because you need to watch it.
That's something I need to watch.
Yeah, and fans of First Wives Club will know exactly what I'm talking about, and they all agree with me.
Is there a First Wives Club fan club?
Yep.
Okay, I'd like to see that. My movie musical, I would choose Blazing Saddles. Mel Brooks has already had a history of turning movies into musicals. The Producers, which became a huge hit on Broadway. Young Frankenstein, not so much. But I think Blazing Saddles would do great. There's like kind of a musical number in the movie, but not really. But I think the story would be awesome with added musical numbers in it. I think with the Book of Mormon being such a big hit, Broadway is ready for another big lewd comedy musical. Mel Brooks is in his 80s and still kicking it, so I'm sure he could write some great music. And if there could somehow be a Gene Wilder cameo, even though I'm pretty sure he couldn't act, that would be the greatest thing ever. Gene Wilder is one of the greats.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I would love to see, a Blazing Saddles musical. I would pay any amount of money to go see that, almost any amount. But, yeah, so anyway, if you have an interesting thought for what movie should be turned into a Broadway musical, we'd love to hear what you think. Send an email to us at ian@realdealblog.com, and we'll put some of our favorite answers on the show. And as always, you can answer old questions as well. Last week we asked, what villains should get their own movies, so you can still answer that. We'd love to hear what you think. All right, that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Cassie, where could people find you this week outside of the podcast?
Google me. You can follow me on Twitter at Cassie Grimaldi. You can find my writing on the internet in a bunch of places, and yeah.
You can find, as always, you can find my writing at realdealblog.com, R-E-E-L, and you can also find old episodes of the podcast, lists, reviews, etc. You can also follow me on Twitter at @IanRealDeal, R-E-E-L. I'll just keep repeating that till the end of time because I think it's hilarious to do that. And you can find all the old podcast episodes on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening once again. Join us next week where maybe we'll have a review of 22 Jump Street and thoughts on the season 4 of Game of Thrones. But as always, 3...
Keep it real.
2, 1. Keep it real. 3, 2, 1. Keep it real. Can we say it at once?
No.
Okay, keep it real.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Whoa.
Keep it real, everybody. Keep it real.